Good evening, all of you beautiful beings of energy and light. Thank you for joining us under the influence of tonight's moon that continues to wax in Taurus. This may have you feeling a bit stuck or stubbornly resisting change, especially if you have a lot of Taurus in your birth chart. Taurus lunar transits highlight what we're holding on to. So this is a good time to figure out what you're most afraid of losing. Whatever that may be has power over you. So close your eyes and imagine yourself without this person, this role, asset, status, whatever it is. Recognize any feelings of self-doubt or insecurity this little exercise triggers. When we face our fears, they lose their power over us. And this frees us to enjoy what we have in gratitude without clinging so tightly to it for fear of losing it. We come together this evening to explore, to connect, to become inspired, and to heal and raise consciousness together. I'm your host, Jessica Dillon Winter, and I pay homage to you for tuning in. I'm coming to you live from the Dive-In in downtown Lake Worth, Florida, and my guest this evening is Patty Lucia. Patty is the owner of a unique cafe in downtown Lake Worth, Florida, called Mother Earth Sanctuary Cafe. Her cafe combines a one-of-a-kind veggie burger menu, but also a little something for those of you who still eat some meat, and the concept of conscious cooking in a cozy, whimsical, and sensual environment which celebrates and holds sacred our connection to Mother Earth. Patty has been creating this cafe experience since 2007, when she originally opened as a coffee house. Before that, she spent more than 20 years as a high school English teacher. She hails from Springfield, Massachusetts, and lived in New York City for 15 years before moving to Florida in 2003. I'm going to talk with Patty this evening about kitchen alchemy, the spiritual and art-inspired events she hosts at Mother Earth Sanctuary Cafe, a little about her personal journey, and all of our connection to the great Mother Earth. Patty, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jessica. It's a real pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
I am as well. I know we spoke, it was probably, maybe 2 months ago about having you on, and I'm excited that you're finally here.
Yes. Now, do you hear me okay?
I do,
am I loud enough for you? Okay,
yep.
Good.
All
I
go well.
Quick sound check there.
No worries. I can hear you loud and clear.
Yes, I've been looking forward to it.
Good. Very good. I've been, you know, of course, as you know, in your cafe many times. I love the food that you have there. You know, being vegetarian for 16 years, it's one of my favorite spots. Can you tell us a little bit about why you opened the cafe?
Oh. Well, it wasn't a cafe when I first opened. It was a coffee house back in 2007, and it's kind of gone through several changes and evolutions just as I have. It's a bit of a reflection of my own journey, if you will. And that's kind of the joy of, I think, owning your own business or going into a venture like this, is it's a kind of an extension of you. So it's an outer expression of you. So when I opened in 2007, I opened with a partner at the time, and it was a coffee house. We're kind of gay-themed coffee house, and you know, 4 months in, we separated, and so I was completely on my own from, you know, pretty much 2008 and had to change the name, and spent a lot of time thinking about that, and realized that what resonated most with me was, it was such an earthy place, and I had time for it to kind of come into my own in terms of what I was doing, what I was creating, what is this journey? I'm on my own now. What am I doing? And it was definitely a community gathering place. I had open mics. I had, you know, poetry nights. I had local musicians. You know, it was really kind of a magical, creative place, and definitely earthy, because I think I am. And there was something, and I was at that time in my journey, particularly my spiritual journey, in my spiritual journey did take off almost immediately as soon as I opened the shop, and there are reasons for that. But I was kind of a sponge at the time. You know that point in your journey where you're like reading every book you can get your hands on, and that was me in 2007, 2008, and into 2009. I was reading every spiritual book I could possibly get my hands on. I was like a little sponge, and so I sacred geometry was definitely resonating with me. I loved the Flower of Life. I was reading a lot of that. About a lot of that. And so when I had to recreate myself, I had to kind of come up with a new name and a new logo. I definitely wanted it to be Mother Earth. I was so much of what I was reading that was most resonating with me at the time, spiritually, was our connection to Earth. And so I wanted to name it Mother Earth, and I wanted somehow to get the sacred geometry of the Flower of Life as the centerpiece of that logo. And so that's what you see when you see the side of my building, or you come inside, that center with the hands holding it is the Flower of Life, which is an ancient, example of sacred geometry, which has been found on temples all over the world. And apparently my understanding is that it means that it holds kind of the secrets geometrically and algebraically to all life on Earth. And so it made sense for it to be the centerpiece of my logo. And then it kind of went, then the journey just kind of continued. And I learned early on that I couldn't really pay the rent with coffee and tea and a few desserts. And so I started expanding my menu, and that just making food and particularly preparing food for people, I realized was a very deeply ingrained right into my DNA. I think I've spent many, many lifetimes preparing food as a sacred endeavor for the people that I love, for the people that I care for. Perhaps many lifetimes ago, preparing for my tribe, whatever it was, everything came so naturally in terms of, creating food for the community. And so the menu began to expand. The reason why I have all those veggie burgers on my menu is because a young customer of mine asked me one day and said, could you please create a veggie burger, because everywhere I go, they're not good, and the ones that I buy aren't good either. And I realized that, so I went out and I bought everyone I could find, and I went and I tried, and I went online and I looked at recipes, and I was like, gee whiz, he's right. That's really difficult. So my very first veggie burger was, one day getting in the kitchen and playing with sweet potato. Who doesn't like sweet potato? So I got in the kitchen, and my very first veggie burger was a sweet potato based burger. And then, of course, it went from there. And, now, a few years later, I have 25 original veggie burgers. So it's just been this creative process in the kitchen, which has combined my own spiritual journey and understanding of things, some kitchen alchemy, the relationship to food. Clearly, we're in a shift where more and more people are wanting to eat healthier, eat more nutritious, be more conscious. We're in this consciousness shift, and it's reflected in how people feel about what they eat. So there is more and more of a demand for the kind of food that I'm preparing, though I do serve meat. But and in terms of just kind of creating meals that are cooked consciously, and I have a sign up front that says "Cooked Made with Love," and it's not just an expression. I really do, and that's a whole conversation in and of itself in terms of what that mm-hmm. looks like in the kitchen. But so my journey has kind of involved. It's been this real creative, multidimensional kind of experience. In and out of the kitchen in this little cafe that has been kind of an example of Patty creating her own reality. It really is. It really, people say we create our own reality. And I think my little cafe is kind of, you walk in and it's really kind of this reality bubble that I have created over the years and continue to create. It continues mm-hmm. to evolve and people who come in participate in that creation. That's what makes it, really so wonderful. So Hopefully that answers your question.
No, absolutely it does. And it branches out into so many other things. Go ahead.
Yes. No, feel free if you have. I didn't want to go too long on answering one particular question. If there are other things you'd like to ask me, we could go in many different directions. And I like to talk,
I know.
So, you know.
And we've already had the discussion about, you know, this being your first time on the show will be very good, you know, introduction and a little bit all over the board. And then, of course, we'll have you on in the future to talk about other topics a little bit more in depth. But,
absolutely.
You know, you talk about the actual place, the location, which, by the way, can you tell us the exact location of Mother Earth Sanctuary Cafe before I go on?
Sure. It's a side street cafe, which I kind of like. It's not something that you're just going to – most people don't stumble into it by accident. You know, it's not on the main drag. But it's 410 2nd Avenue North. And so it's kind of close to Federal. It's on a one-way street, so you have to enter from the west and come east to get to it. So it's on the same street as Publix. So often people will find me because they've just been shopping at Publix and they're riding down the street and they see this tiny little building with this cosmic mural on it. And you kind of wonder,
which
what
my
what
friend
is that
Gina
place?
White painted. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really quite spectacular. So it's kind of it's a small place with a very big vision, and you kind of get that sense looking at the outside mural. So it's kind of hard to miss if you're on 2nd Avenue North.
It is that. That is absolutely true. But what I was about to start talking about when you brought up the actual location itself is just the energy there. You know, I mean, I definitely, you know, being very empathic and intuitive, I felt very drawn there on my first visit. And it was actually somewhat accidental that I did run into it. And I was with a friend. We had just come back from... That's right. It was a purposeful accident. I see that now. But we had just come from Buddhist practice at the Dharma Center down the street, and we were looking for lunch, and we wanted to go to Yama on Lake Avenue, just, you know, a couple blocks over, and went there, and they were closed. So we said, okay, well, we'll go to, I can't remember which place exactly next, but right down the street. And we went there, and they were also closed. And so we just kept kind of wandering in the direction of your cafe. And then all of a sudden it popped in my mind and I thought, oh, I think that Mother Earth Cafe is over there somewhere. I heard about that and wanted to try it. And we walked in and, you know, ended up having the most awesome conversation with you and with a couple of other people who were in there that day. And, you know, what we thought was going to be a quick lunch ended up, you know, I think closing you down after, you know, 3 hours or so. but it's just, I love the energy.
I love it
there.
When that happens.
And I see that it happens a lot. It seems every time I go in there, you know, there's something really cool going on with interactions, you know, among people. And you were talking about the flower of life, which is, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No. So you, I was just, going to say, so you wanted me to speak more about the energy of the place. Yes, and so the flower of life is part of it. It's not the whole story, but it certainly contributes to the energy of the place. And I think, and that's why it's been, you know, and this is where this is where it can get a little out there for people. But I'm kind of out there. So, you know, and I've shared this with many people. But like I told you, it felt like my spiritual journey kind of got turbocharged the moment I opened. Even when I opened as a coffee house, I felt a particular presence, a particular energy there. There's a particular energy in that spot. And, you know, even as I was going through a lot of changes, I mean, you know, to open up a business and then, you know, go through a separation is very, very trying, and usually people will close down, you know, that'll cause a business to close down quite quickly. But I felt very, very supported by the energy from the beginning. I felt that there was kind of like, you know, people have all kinds of, you know, gifts or whatever, and you know, you clairvoyant, you know, clairsentient, claircognizant. I think I'm definitely empathic as well, and so I'm a little more clairsentient. And there were just like the way that I felt there, and the things that I just knew. You know, when you kind of just have this sense, it's like you just know, and you can't explain mm-hmm. why. You just know. And so I had that experience a lot there. I knew that I belonged there. I knew that there was something that I needed to do there. And I was the energy itself supported me. Now, what I discovered that, you know, a lot the energy there, I believe, it has to do with the 200-year-old mango tree right outside my kitchen door. It's a very... It's very, very powerful, has a lot of energy. Many people have commented on it. And even before I kind of found out more about the tree, I used to, you know, when people would come in and they would have like a little heart, broken heart, or they had just had an argument with a partner, I would often give them their cup of tea and tell them, well, go sit under the mango tree, you'll feel better. And I called it my intensive care unit, because it seemed like if I had a sick plant, I could put it under the mango tree. If there was somebody who had a broken heart or wasn't feeling so well, I would say, go sit under the mango tree. And they generally always, you know, felt better after sitting under the tree. So it had a lot of healing energy in and of itself. And so the stories associated, I mean, there are people who have come through and have communed with the sentience of the tree. The tree mm-hmm. is sentient. It does have a consciousness. It is very, very much connected to that particular place. And there are, from what I can tell, spirits associated with the tree. One of them in particular we've identified as the spirit of a Native American priestess and healer. And apparently I have a connection to her. From what we can tell, and these are people who have kind of connected with the tree and gotten messages and so forth. As what I can tell, her name is Hade, and that is a short version of a very long Native American name. We are connected. We are connected. We have some kind of lineage. So when I arrived there, I was arriving home to some kind of spiritual home, and I didn't know it. Mm-hmm. So What's happened with me there, from what I can tell, is that I am working in unison with the non-physicals in that space to provide an environment for healing, and also food that feels like it's healing, and so it's been quite an experience. Me, and there have been many things that have kind of happened that have been that have indicated that, you know, I am exactly where I need to be, and I have a lot of help. I have a lot of non-physical help, and some of the non-physical help there are beings I have been connected to for a very, very long time. So I was drawn there because it was kind of like my job to be there, and my job to kind of keep this space open so that people can be nourished in many different ways, and in ways that, you know, I may not have anything to do. It may be that they are healed in some ways just by being in that space, and sometimes it may not have anything to do with me. It may have to do with the other energy that are there. So I'm kind of holding space for all of that to happen in that space. So Have I? I'm not sure if I've completely answered your question. That was kind of a long story.
No, that's okay, Patty. That's okay. So, and, you know, you make me think about a question I wanted to talk about, which is asking about the ingredients that you use in your recipes and, you know, the connections that they have. And you talk about, you know, of course, the nourishment through the food that you make. Of course, it's delicious, too, and so creative. Conspiracy Burger is my favorite. I always kind of stick to that one just because it's so good, and it's hard to make myself branch out and try something new. But last time I was in, I know you added a new, I think it was a garbanzo-based burger. So I made myself
and
not
Aphrodite,
get the conspiracy.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And try the other.
I've never eaten something...
Yeah.
At Mother Earth that I do not like. So, but what about the ingredients?
Well, thank you.
Of course.
Wow. Well, you know, just the whole process of creating dishes, creating food for people is really, really quite a process. And when I'm, when I'm in the kitchen, I definitely go into kind of this meditative zone. And I think that's where, you know, if there are non-physicals, they're hanging out in the kitchen and they're whispering in my ears. Because, you know, people will often ask me, how did you come up with that? Or how is it that, and often, to be honest with you, Jessica, I don't really know. I mean, I know I'm kind of, I naturally love working with food and preparing food, but if you had told me 8 years ago that I'd have this many veggie burgers and they would, you know, I probably wouldn't have believed you. So it's been quite an interesting journey for me. So, and so a lot of the consciousness about food prep in my kitchen has been my own journey into being more conscious about the food that I am preparing for people. And it has to do with the ingredients, and it also has to do, so some of it is the what of what, you know, what you use, but also the how of it is very, very important. How you approach the ingredients, you know, how you relate to them, what is the energy in your kitchen. So, you know, I like using there. I have all kinds of. I use fresh ingredients as much as possible. You know, I was just talking to the young woman who works with me now. Her name is Kihai, and she was saying how, you know, almost every single day, for instance, people will come in and say, "I wish you'd bottle that cilantro sauce because, you know, I can't get enough of it. It's, you know, it's this burger sauce,
awesome.
And people go crazy." And she watches me make it just about every day. And, you know, so we're having this conversation in the kitchen. And I said, you see how simple it is. And I even have a video, a how-to video, that shows people how to make it. And it is really, really simple. She said, yes, but people go really crazy about it. And I said, so how do you accept it? Because I'm always teaching, right? I'm like the constant, I'm like the never-ending teacher. So there I am with my student once again. And I'm asking, you know, I was like, so how do you explain that? She said, well, because it's all fresh. It's everything that goes into it is fresh. There's no, people aren't tasting high fructose corn syrup or any preservatives. It's all really fresh. And so when people when people taste something that's fresh, their body takes note. Their body kind of sits up and pays attention. It's like, whoa, what is this? Because we're so used to when you go out, most restaurants, they've got a big Cheney Brothers or U.S. Food or Cisco truck pulling up in the back door, and so much of it comes out of cans. And so it is hard to find places where someone's actually, you know, chopping the onions and the cilantro and the garlic and everything in the back and kind of making things fresh. So that's an important, you know, I make a point, for instance, I like to go to the produce market myself. I do have somebody who picks up other things for me, but when it comes down to the actual living ingredients that I use, I like to go to the produce market and pick up my own vegetables. And I do that because, for me, it's important to begin my relationship with the vegetables at the produce market. If I could begin my relationship with them in a garden, I would. but I don't have a garden that grows all of this stuff. So my relationship with the vegetables that I am using begins at the produce stand. And what I mean by that is I am approaching them. I am usually smiling when I'm shopping and I'm picking out my cilantro and I'm picking out the eggplant or all of that, because I am basically the best way I could describe it is I'm in a vibration of invitation. I am in this vibration of inviting these living foods to come play with me in my kitchen and provide nourishment for the people that I am joyfully going to cook for. And so there's kind of this, I go into the produce market with this kind of this underlying sense of excitement. Like we're, you know, I'm inviting my new friends to this, you know, to have these experiences with me and participate in nourishing the people in my community, you know, mm-hmm. And so that's literally the vibration that I'm in. And so, and then it continues in the kitchen. And so I think when we live in such a weird culture. You know, mm-hmm. we live in a culture, for instance, where it's like, you know, all the rage. You know, we're all into trends. So a trend is I want to eat only living foods. I want to eat only living foods. All my food is going to be organic and it's going to be living. And I get it. And that's important. But what happens is people don't treat the food like it's living. They don't
right.
treat it like it has its own consciousness. We're kind of just mm-hmm. grabbing it and throwing it in the cart. We're not really paying much attention to it, as opposed to I am a living thing. I am now I am now bringing in this other living thing into my vibration. And what kind of vibration am I bringing this living thing into? And how am I going to treat this living thing? You know, because I think that all living things have.
Patty, are you there?
Jessica. I am so sorry. You know,
okay.
I was talking about just before the show, I was saying, no, my call, no, I don't think we have to worry about the call ever dropping. Well, there you go. There you go.
It's okay.
Sorry about that,
okay.
folks. You know, I thought it was foolproof. I even have like my little crystal here, and I have, you know what I mean? Like I have all my little things out by the phone. So,
so do
I'm
I.
Sorry about that.
It's okay, you know.
It's okay. But maybe it was just the universe saying, you know, maybe the universe was just saying, you're getting a little long-winded, Patty. You want to just wrap this, you know, this thread up. So, but at any rate, that's kind of, you know, just the consciousness in the kitchen, and I really do. I think honestly, I really believe if you have a joyful kitchen, you're going to make joyful food because the energy goes into the food. There are so many of us who are trying to live conscious lives, right? We go to yoga, we meditate, you know, we do all this. We try to be conscious drivers and conscious teachers and conscious parents and, you know, conscious. And then, you know, and that's a lot of work. And then you get home at the end of the day and you're kind of tired and maybe you're grumpy because you've been out on a highway with crazy people, you know, and all this crazy energy. And you bring all of that that dense energy into your kitchen to prepare food for yourself, for your family, or for your loved ones. And I think that it is important for us to think about that you know where we're at, where you know how are we feeling to not enter. You know how they say don't go to bed angry. I
mm-hmm.
don't think that you should cook angry. I don't think you should go into the kitchen angry. The kitchen and the bedroom are very, very similar in terms of they're both energy centers in our homes. And so to approach the kitchen in the same way that you would approach the bedroom, you know, don't go into the kitchen angry because that anger does get into the food. I don't know if you've ever eaten a meal that was made by an angry person, but, you know, it can be a little rough.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I don't know that I've ever actually paid attention to having a meal that was cooked angrily. However, I definitely do ascribe to the belief, you know, in things being cooked with love, you know, and how they seem to taste better mm-hmm. when they are. And you talked about that, you know, in our opening about one of the mm-hmm. ingredients, you know, that you use very much being love. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you've kind of, without using these exact words, you've touched on this concept of mindful eating quite a bit. And that's something that I try to do, you know, before I sit down to eat a meal, you know, think about everything from, you know, the source of the food and, you know, how it came from the earth and the people who grew it, you know, put their time and energy, you know, into, you know, raising that food and how it made its way to my plate. And then, you know, how it is nourishing mm-hmm. my body as I'm eating it and all of those things. Do you have anything to add or say about mindful eating?
Well, absolutely. You know, many people believe, and it is kind of unfortunate that many people believe that if you're going to be more of a conscious eater, if you're going to do mindful eating, that you've got to spend your whole paycheck at Whole Foods, you know,
no.
get only organic and get the best ingredients and all of that. And most people can't afford to do that. And even if you eat mm-hmm. meat, yeah, or if you eat things that are not organic, there's something very, very effective about blessing your food. And doing kind of like what you were just describing, you know, blessing your food. If you're eating, you know, if you eat meat, and I don't have any judgments about that at all, that there is a way that you can bless the food. And gratitude, I think, is really one of the best vibrations to bring to anything, really, but to your food. So to be grateful to that animal and to the plant and say grace or to bless your food in whatever ways that you can, and it really does affect it and energetically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I would what I would recommend for folks who are like, I'd like to eat more consciously. I can't afford to eat more consciously. And a lot of people, you know, say that. It's a very real challenge for people. But mm-hmm. it's amazing. We are such energetic beings, and there's so much energy and intention that comes out of our hands. That's why I like to prepare food with my hands. I also love it when people have an opportunity to eat something with their hands. That our hands emit a lot of energy, and so whatever your intention is, if you can just imagine it just coming, just pouring out of your hands. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you put your hands over your food and you bless your food. It really is emitting that kind of energy to your food.
One of the reasons that Ethiopian food is my favorite food is actually because of that whole experience and eating it. I don't know if you've
Absolutely.
Eaten Ethiopian yourself. Yeah. Unfortunately,
yeah.
I don't
Girl,
know that
you know
it's places around
I
here to get it.
I think we must be related. You know what I think it is, Jessica? I think that you and I have shared a lifetime in Ethiopia. Because I feel the same way. As a matter of fact, just today I made a batch of spicy Ethiopian red lentil soup for the shop. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. As a matter of fact, I mean, I do. I love that culture. I love that they eat with their hands, that they use the injera. They put their food on the injera and they rip it off. And as a matter of fact, they sit around and they eat with their hands. And a tradition is that they feed each other. And it is a way of kind of blessing and showing their affection for the person, the sister, the brother, the mother, the father, the aunt, the uncle, the grandma, sitting next to them to offer them some food and to literally feed them something by hand, because it's energy to energy. If you think about the like a complete circuit, you know, like a circuit of energy, right? So here I am, I'm making my food by hand, and then I'm giving you this food to eat, and you eat it with your hands. We have a complete circuit. And if you can mm-hmm. imagine the utensils that we use, kind of breaking that energetic circuit. So in a way, you're really, if you're preparing food with love and you've made it with your hands and they are eating it with your hands, then it is an unbroken circuit, you know, mm-hmm. energetic circuit. And that's kind of how I like to think about it. I'd love to eliminate all utensils and eat like the Ethiopians for every meal, because I just think that's the way to go. As a matter of fact, on my personal time in my home, I make tej. Now tej is a honey wine, an Ethiopian honey wine.
It's really good. Yeah.
And so I make my own, and I actually had to send away for the buckthorn sticks that they uh-huh. use in tej to ferment it. But what I do is I just started one with the Equinox. I put mm-hmm. my 2-gallon big glass container on my altar. So I ferment it on my altar, and I kind of sage it every day, and I have a little bell that I ring, and I'm setting my intention that the tej that I make is healing on all levels for whoever drinks it. And that's kind of, you know, and then I give it away, you know, as gifts mm-hmm. to people, you know. So mm-hmm. I love that culture, and I've incorporated it in new ways, and you know, in my eating, and then also with the tej that I make. I call my tej Meitanya tej, because Meitanya is Aramaic for altar, so it's altar wine. But my altar,
that's awesome.
You know, yeah, it's a different kind of altar than say on a church altar.
I was actually, I was so thrilled because I was in Los Angeles a couple weeks ago now, I guess it is. That was one of the very first things when I got off the plane. I thought, I'm getting some Ethiopian food while I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
Since moving to South Florida from Washington, D.C., I haven't been able to find anywhere that really has it. But I'll have to talk with you about getting some recipes so I can make some at home.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is that you'll have to send away for your spices. That's what I've had to do, you know, send away for my Burberry and send away for things. But, Washington, D.C. has great, you know, I, when I lived in New York City, you know, great Ethiopian restaurants, but not so mm-hmm. much down here. So if you're going to cook Ethiopian, you got to hit the internet for your spices.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've talked, of course, a lot about food, which is just natural because, you know, as you said, you probably, I very much agree, in lifetimes previous, we're very connected in some way to some sort of cooking. I feel the same about myself. I feel very at home in the kitchen. I love it. But you also, you paint, you write, you do poetry. So let's talk a little bit about that and about how you've used the cafe as a place that people can go to express themselves creatively.
Right. Well, it's a place where people can definitely go and express themselves creatively. It's also a healing place. And I think it's that it has that kind of energy because that's what it has done for me. That has been part of the kind of my own unfolding. I've kind of been, you know, this whole journey of self-discovery, and it began with, you know, definitely that location and the magic and the energy of that location, and also the non-physical help that I have there, and that everybody has to, you know, for support there. But it's also because I started in basically doing what I love. You know, right? So I started, this was something that I really, really loved. And so when you start to do what you love, let's say you quit a corporate job. I liked teaching. I like this better. But if you quit a corporate job, it really does free you up to do more of what you love. And you might discover along the way that when you start taking little steps in doing what you love, that all of a sudden there are all these things that just kind of blossom, and you would have, oh, I like that. Oh, I'm pretty good at that. you start discovering all of these creative things about you that you didn't know before when you were on the hamster wheel of the corporation. You know, so I open up the shop, and if you had told me in 2007 that my art would be on the wall of the coffee shop, you know, the coffee shop or the cafe one day, I would have laughed. I would have said, I'm not an artist. I write. I do poetry. I'm a short story writer. That's what I do. I don't think I know how to hold a brush. But what happened over a period of time was I started to explore. And part of that exploration really came out of, you know, what I was experiencing at the time that I picked up brush was the limitations of words. I was beginning to have experiences, and many of them spiritual, that I did not have the language for.
Yeah.
And so I was right up against the limitations of words. And let me tell you, I love words. I do. Mm-hmm. I was an English teacher. I love those words. But I was really, really up against limitations. So I picked up the brush. I mean, at first I picked up the pastel chalk and so forth, and then I started working with acrylics. And one thing after another, before you knew it, all of the walls were filled with my art, and a lot of it is these light bulb moments that I might have in my spiritual journey that I somehow want to convey with color and motion, you know, and form and so forth. And so it was it's been best expressed through painting, you know. And so that's what you see up on the walls are these, you know, depictions of, you know, my spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember last time I was talking with you about one of your paintings that you have hanging on the east wall that was inspired by a walk you took through Bryant Park.
Yeah, I do these, I do these evening walks, you know, usually around the time the sun is going down, and it's pretty. Bryant Park, you know, we're blessed. I mean, it's a pretty place to live, and I sat down. There's a particular bench that sometimes I'll sit on to kind of just get into this meditative state, and so I kind of got into this bit of a meditation, and from that meditation, before I even got up from the bench, I felt like, and I know that, you know, a lot of your listeners kind of know what this experience is, you know, to kind of come out of a meditation and your whole heart chakra feels so full, so full of love that, you know, everything you look at, you are looking at it with, you know, with love, with acceptance, with acknowledgement, with acknowledging the beauty in everything. And that's kind of what I was feeling. And so I'm making my way back from my walk, and I'm walking into this breeze. The breeze is kind of now, you know, blowing in, you know, into my path. And I just had this thought that all of this that I had in my heart, if I could just put it onto the breeze so that it could float to every person out there walking their dogs, every home where people are sitting and having dinner, everyone who's walking or driving by, or, you know, the fish, you know, all the trees and everything, just because I wanted to be able to give it. And that kind of inspired this this painting. It's actually the biggest painting that I've done, which shows a kind of these rays of light coming out of someone's heart and creating stars. And I just think my sense of that is that, you know, we're probably doing that all the time, and we don't know it. I think that's kind of that's what humans are probably doing. That whatever our vibration or our frequency is, it is, you know, we're kind of emitting it. We're emitting it all the time, whether we're putting it onto the breeze like I did that evening or not. We are emitting our whatever our frequency or our vibration is. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what inspired that.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful painting. I hope that our listeners will go in and check it out. So you consider yourself, Patty, a consciousness explorer. You don't claim a particular spiritual practice. You respect all of them and take a little bit, you know, from here, there, and whatever resonates with you. Can you talk a little bit about that, about, you know, the rituals that you get together for yourself?
Yeah. I kind of like to, I've joked with people about how I have claimed no religion, so no religion can claim me.
Uh-huh. I like it.
And so that's kind of, I guess I've always been a bit of a free spirit when it comes to that. And I've explored and I've read lots of, you know, lots of things, and a lot of things resonate with me. So I do appreciate, I grew up in a family that had two religions. I grew up with Catholicism, and my father was a Baptist. So,
no, same here.
It was nuts. See, I told you. you know, so it was a little crazy, and it was kind of enough to turn me off at a pretty young age. I'm really not, and have not been a fan of organized religion for, you know, since I was really quite young. Though I was always kind of spiritual, though, in kind of an unaware way. So I do have practices that I do believe in a spiritual cleanliness. In living a conscious life, I do believe that, you know, I do believe in karma. I try not to create any, you know, every day. You know, I don't want to create any.
No bad karma.
You know, no, exactly. And it is true. It does work both ways. And I think that our good deeds are, you know, there is a return on that, you know, and so I kind of live by those principles. I do sage, you know, I sage my shop, I sage my home.
And you actually sage all of downtown Lake Worth.
Yeah, I do. It's kind of funny. It's a recent development, and I have a group of folks, and the group is growing, who enjoy doing this. This is once a month, usually around the time of the new moon. Because I have a lot of sage at the shop, I do sell it, and we go on a sage walk. You know, I call it a sage walk, and we go downtown Lake Worth with burning sage. And people generally really, really enjoy it. And they'll people who might be sitting having a beer, you know, at one of the restaurants or bars downtown will often say, "Hey, come here and sage me. I need to be saged." Or, you know, folks will say, "Hey, there they are. They're cleaning downtown. They're cleansing downtown Lake Worth." So, you know, the concept is that, you know, I do believe that the smoke from sage, you know, I mean, the Native Americans and a lot, so much of what, you know, the ancient beliefs are, you know, resonate with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it does break up dense energy. And I do think mm-hmm. that there's a lot of dense energy in areas, especially where there's bars. I think there's a tremendous amount of dense energy that is around bars, in bars. And it's good, I think, to break it up, you know. And mm-hmm. so there's nothing wrong with a little sage walk once a month to kind of just send the sage up in and around downtown Lake Worth. And so people get it. And, of course, some people think it's really, really freaky. And it's, what's interesting is a lot of people, while they may sage their homes and they may even sage their businesses, to do something like that publicly is a little much for people. Even mm-hmm. if they are somebody, they are devout sagers, right? They're mm-hmm. devout smudgers. I smudge my house every, but I'm not going to go on that walk because, you know, people might think. And I think we're kind of, in my view, living in a time when, you know, it's important for us to step up for whatever our beliefs are. You know, mm-hmm. whatever they are, and what I think people will find is that there's more support out there than you think, even mm-hmm. for the freaky spiritual, like the more freaky stuff that you believe in. There's more and more support for it out there because we are in the throes of an awakening, and so mm-hmm. you know, I think things like a sage walk in downtown Lake Worth, people get, you know, more so than you would think. My next one is going to be on April. And we're doing it again on April 19th. It is a Sunday. We do it on Sundays. We meet at Mother Earth at 5 o'clock, and you know, you can bring your own sage or I have sage, and then we go for a walk.
In the
it's
evening,
about a
right?
half hour. 5 o'clock at the end of the day, yeah.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
You know, you just talked about, you know, people who are devout smudgers and, you know, yet don't want to participate in a more public way. And that brought up something to me that it seems to come up every single show. And I thought, wow, maybe I'll get through a show and this topic won't come up. But here it is. And that is ego. You know, I'm sure you're very well aware that, you know, that comes from mm-hmm. a place of ego, you know, the negative ego, trying to talk someone mm-hmm. out of doing something that really has a very positive effect. But because, mm-hmm. you know, their ego is making them aware of what other people might be thinking of them. So.
mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And that's,
well,
you know,
I actually think it does have to do with ego, though. Don't, you know, I also believe that ego, like everything, you know, like ego is also, helping us do the walk in the first place. Ego helps give us the cojones, right? The cojones to get up, right? So, mm-hmm. so there's that. So I try to keep a balanced view of the issues of ego as much as possible. Like I'm not so much. I don't necessarily agree that we should completely purge ourselves of ego, though. Mm-hmm. I do think that fear. And we live in a society, and I know we're coming up to the end of the show, but fear comes at us from so many directions that we're not even aware of it. So mm-hmm. there's the fear of being seen as crazy, and yep. anything that you're about to do, if you think that people are going to think you're crazy, then we can thank the institution of psychology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in all of the whatever's propped it up, to literally, that is part of what the controlling mechanism of the matrix. Oh, don't step too out. Thank you.
Patty, you're breaking up. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it better?
A little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's, you know, it's the bigger issue here, in my view, is fear and how it has permeated almost everything, mm-hmm. you know, everything in our lives. You know, it's a controlling mechanism.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And that's what, you know, I opened the show, you know, on those thoughts, you know.
I loved that, by the way. I loved that. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Loved that.
Yeah, I try, you know, I've always felt very connected to the moon, and I'm very aware of the moon cycles and you know, the signs mm-hmm. that the moon transits through and the effects that they have. And I've heard a lot of people mm-hmm. say, you know, oh, well, I don't really believe in or like to look at horoscopes because I feel like, you know, it kind of makes me, you know, too actively aware of it and then determines, you know, the outcome of my day and whatnot. And so many times mm-hmm. I don't look at it till the end of the day. And then I look back and it's like a confirmation
right.
for me, you know, of, oh, okay, that's
yeah.
why I was feeling that way or this way because the moon was
yeah.
in
yeah, that
such
explains,
and such sign.
Right, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
yeah.
but we talked, you know, about fear and how it can have, you know, such a power over you, you know, and as soon as you start, mm-hmm. you know, bringing that to the surface and recognizing it and then just, you know, letting that go, that's when, you know, you gain the freedom to really just open up and enjoy and live in gratitude, you know, without clinging, you know, so tightly out of fear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And face, you know, baby steps, face every fear, you know, the fears that come up, just kind of lean into it and, mm-hmm. and look at it and actually be grateful for the fear, because what it's showing you is that you are coming up, you're coming up against your, some kind of limitation in your belief systems, because the mm-hmm. fear is not, it's not based on anything real. Like if you really,
right.
really know who you are, then that fear is a false fear. And so it is an opportunity. And I know that's hard to think about when you're in the throes of, you know, it's something really, really fearful, but it is an opportunity to really lean into it and ask yourself some questions. What exactly am I afraid of here? What is the fear, you know?
And with that thought, we'll go into our closing meditation, where I always choose, just very randomly, I actually allow the universe to choose for us a passage that I read from Thich Nhat Hanh's book, How to Love. So I'm going to open the page here to letting go of notions. The notions and ideas we have about happiness can entrap us. We forget that they are just notions and ideas. Our idea of happiness may be the very thing that's preventing us from being happy. When we're caught in a belief that happiness should take a particular form, we fail to see the opportunities for joy that are right in front of us. I think that's very fitting to the conversation.
That is absolutely beautiful. And yes, and thank you.
Beautiful. You're very welcome. Thank you, Patty, for joining me. I appreciate it so much, and I look forward to having you on again in the near future.
I think we have it would be really a lot of fun. It's been such a pleasure to spend this time with you in conversation. I'd love to do it again. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Jessica.
You're welcome. I'll come into the cafe soon, and we can, start talking a little bit more about maybe, forming a show around a particular topic. And I know we'll have many more to do in the future. And thank all of you listeners for being in the stream. I hope you'll join us next week when we speak with graffiti artist and painter Javi Palacios, also known as Five Pens. That's next Tuesday at 7 p.m. on In the Stream. Good night, all of you beautiful people.